saving someone's life, as you might expect, does mean some gratitude, but that gratitude comes with one big condition in the form of a wife of the saved person. And that in the headhunter country of New Guinea. So it gets complicated and dangerous in a hurry for Paul Frees and Ben Wright, starring in Escape, in a story called Two Came Back from August 4th, 1950.
Tired of the everyday routine? Ever dream of a life of romantic adventure? Want to get away from it all?
We offer you Escape! Escape, designed to free you from the four walls of today for a half hour of high adventure. Escape, brought to you by your Richfield gasoline dealer and the Richfield Oil Corporation of New York, marketers of Richfield gasolines, motor oils, and other petroleum products. Look for the Richfield Eagle on the cream and blue pumps.
Tonight, we escape to the headhunter backcountry on the island of New Guinea, and the story of two men trapped there with a beautiful but treacherous woman, as Jules Archer tells it in Two Came Back.
Suppose this big guy, 6'5", grabs your hand and says...
You're my pal, Johnny. There's a million-dollar jackpot and I'm cutting you in.
And suppose this blonde number, all curves and green eyes, leans up soft and murmurs...
Johnny, you're bad. Like me? I like you bad. Like me.
And suppose this blonde number, all curves and green eyes, waits until his big back is turned and then leans up again. It can get to be a problem, you know what I mean? A problem. By the time we'd passed over the Golden Gate and were headed out over the Pacific to the west, I could see this business of Gabe and Lily and me was strictly for the squirrels, and I wanted no part of it. There was no backing out now. I'd tried that for a week before takeoff, and it hadn't worked.
Johnny, don't talk crazy. You're my friend, aren't you? Aren't you?
Sure, Gabe. Sure, I'm your friend, but I don't want to go, that's all.
Oh, you gotta go, Johnny. It's a million-dollar strike, I tell you. Oh, and after what you've done for me, I gotta let you in. I gotta.
You really ought to come, Johnny.
Well, I don't know. But I did know. I knew that million-dollar strike or no million-dollar strike, this was the time for me, John Walker, to stay home. You see, it was all because this pal, this Gabe, had been my sergeant on New Guinea. We were doing guerrilla mop-up work. Rugged duty, what with the Japs scattered all over thousands of miles of interior and all. When Gabe disappeared, just plain vanished. We all figured the guy had caught one and was dead. The lieutenant reported him missing in action. We forgot about it. Then one morning, about 3 weeks later, he shows. Not a scratch, not a word about where he's been or why or what. Well, they were all for shipping him back to Guam for a desertion trial, but Gabe, being a real rough soldier and all, being the kind of guy we needed bad right then, they decided to chuck the book for the time being and keep him on. It was, like I say, guerrilla mop-up work. And a couple of nights later, we were heading down this trail when a machine gun nest went off right in our faces. We all hit the ground, excepting Gabe. He dropped to one knee and sprayed the trees with his Browning. A big guy, he stood out like a pinwheel on the 4th of July. Yep, Gabe caught one. I saw the BAR fall out of his hands, and down he went. I wriggled through the kunai grass and onto the jungle trail and got him by his collar. Now, why go into it? I was a hero, I guess. I saved his life. And what did it get me?
Baby.
Trouble. It was in the spring of 47 that Gabe's letters finally caught up with me. I was in New York then. He was in Frisco. At first, I thought it was, well, just the old hoorah, but I was his buddy for keeps because I'd saved his life. But one of the letters had a plane ticket and a C note, along with a line about, I'm going to let you in on something big if you'll just come out to the coast. So I thought, maybe the guy's got something. I caught the plane, and the next day I found myself walking down this empty street in Frisco with an address in my hand. And a real funny feeling in my head that I ought to turn around and go back home.
Well, hello.
Hello.
Looking for somebody?
Yeah.
Who?
Oh, it doesn't matter. I got the wrong address. Hey, that's a real slick house coat you got on.
This? Oh, no, it's just an old thing, you know.
Well, on you, it looks like $1 million.
Yeah?
Yeah.
What address was it you were looking for?
Oh, 403.
This is 403.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Does Gabor Krulovich live here?
My husband.
Oh.
Uh-huh. Gabe!
Huh?
For you! A man.
Yeah? What does he want?
I can't imagine.
Well, why... Oh, Johnny!
Hey, Gabe!
Johnny boy, so you got here, huh?
Sure.
Oh, gee, am I glad to see you.
Gabe, you're looking good.
Hey, so are you, so are you. Look at that guy.
Is this the Johnny you've been talking so much about?
Yeah, Lily, this is Johnny. Johnny, meet Lily. Lily, Johnny. Hey, didn't know I got married, did you, guy?
No, Gabe. No, I didn't know you'd got married.
Yeah. Not a bad little dish for a big slob like me, huh?
Congratulations.
Shall we come in out of this doorway?
Yeah, let's do that. Oh, Johnny, you're your guy. You know, Johnny saved my life, honey, did I tell you?
1,000,000 times.
And that's how I met Lily. Well, that night we sat up talking until the sun came up. I was wondering just what she was trying to pull. Marrying this Bo Hunkus with his big feet and dirty undershirt and all, when he hauled out the little leather bag and dumped the contents all over the table.
Hey, what do you think of this, Johnny?
Gabe, that gold?
That's just samples. Where that came from, there's enough more to make us all millionaires, Johnny.
You're kidding.
No. Hey, remember in New Guinea when I went AWOL?
Yeah.
That was just before Johnny saved my life, honey. Did I ever tell you about Johnny saving my life?
Yeah,
Gabe, about the gold, huh?
Oh, yeah. Well, when I went AWOL, I thought I'd just do a little fishing or something. You know, I was kind of tired of the war. You understand?
Yeah, I understand, Gabe.
So I took off into the hills. Oh, Johnny, that is some country. Believe me, wild but pretty. Real pretty. And what sunsets? You never saw such sunsets.
Gabe, huh? The gold.
Oh, yeah. Well, I seen this quartz stuff up there in the hills, and some of it was glittering. And, well, this is it. I made me a map. When I came back down, I can find it again without any trouble. That is, I mean, we can find it.
You and me?
And Lily, the three of us. Lily wouldn't want to miss all that adventure, would you, baby?
I should say not.
See? Ain't she cute? Ain't she? You know, every time I look at her, Johnny, I wonder... Now, why would a cute little dish like that marry a big slob like me?
Because you're so manly, sweetmeats.
Sweetmeats? Did you hear that, Johnny? Ain't she the limit? Sweetmeats, me!
Well, it didn't take any great genius to figure that she'd smelled money when she married him. It also didn't take any great genius to figure that Lily was going to disrupt some harmony. Now, I've never seen myself as a wife stealer, you know? So by the time that Gabe had bought all the stuff for the trip, I was ready to duck out, money or no. But Gabe wouldn't hear of it. And, well, you know how it is when you put things off. All of a sudden, I wake up to realize that we're flying over the Golden Gate and on out west over the Pacific. And I thought, oh, this is no good. You know something? I was right. San Francisco to Honolulu. From Honolulu to Guam. From Guam to Moresby. And all the time she's leaning up against me with perfume and all and those big green eyes. Moresby to Salamaua. Salamaua to Wewak. And Gabe has given me the happy stuff about how glad he is his best friend and his wife like each other so much. Then down over the palm groves, the native Lakotois, sago-thatched huts, down, and there we were. New Guinea. Gold. Trouble.
Yeah, going up the Pacific River, eh, mates?
Yeah. Oh, you better give us a couple of pounds of that powdered milk there.
Pacific River. That's a rum country, that. Another patrol officer got done in up there last week.
Done in?
Oh, hey, how about some 45 ammunition?
Aren't you, huh? Yes, done in. Headhunters.
Gabe, you didn't tell me there were headhunters.
Huh? Oh, don't you worry, honey. You got me and Johnny to look out for you.
Well, it's no bloody business of mine, mate. Here, this the ammo you want?
Yeah, that's... Yeah.
No bloody business of mine, but I wouldn't take a woman up into that country. Might make it worse.
Worse? What's worse than getting your head hung up on a pole? Gabe, I want to go home.
Oh, now don't you worry, honey.
Of course, a woman would be a prize up there, lady. I mean, they wouldn't kill her. Odds are they'd make a queen out of her. Wouldn't touch her, just worship her like.
That's good?
Well, that's up to you.
Well, I don't like it.
An hour later, packs bulging with supplies, we were off on the trail that wound up over the Purple Mountains, the Prince Alexander Range, and on toward Mai Mai. Gabe carried the heavy floatboat bag topped with a thick duffel of provisions. I followed, carrying two packs, one on top of the other. Lily brought up the rear, carrying a light pack of clothing, mostly her own. It was rough going that first day. Gabe didn't seem to mind. But me, my feet started to cave in after the first 10 miles. It was all right with me when Lily squawked.
Gabe!
What?
Let's stop.
Well, it's only 3:30, honey.
Let's stop, Gabe.
Another couple of hours, we can be over the first mountain.
Manana, Gabe. My back is breaking.
Okay, honey.
He lowered his big pack and then took off into the jungle.
Hey, where are you going?
We'll need some firewood.
Oh. Oh, Johnny. I'm tired.
Yeah, me too.
Oh. Oh, it feels good to get those off. Oh, whoever heard of carrying two packs at once?
Good old Gabe.
Yeah.
Come here, Johnny.
What do you want?
I know what you think about me, Johnny. You think I'm bad. It's only because I'm bored. Unhappy and bored. I could be a one-man woman, Johnny.
No. I'm glad to hear about it.
For the right man, Johnny.
Sure.
For you, Johnny.
I don't think Gabe would think it's such a hot idea.
Maybe he wouldn't have to, Johnny.
Meaning?
Maybe after we get the gold, he'll fall off a cliff. Or he gets eaten up by a tiger or stepped on by an elephant.
There's no elephants in New Guinea.
Don't be dull, Johnny.
I gotta be, Lily. I gotta be. You're real poison.
Oh, Johnny.
You're real bad poison.
Mm-hmm. I'm bad. So are you, Johnny.
Yeah. You know, that looks real funny. Lipstick in a jungle.
You You think so? Looks even funnier on you.
You oughtn't to do that, baby.
Here comes Gabe.
I forgot my gun. Always like to carry a gun in the jungle. Never know when you're gonna run into a snake. Huh, Johnny?
Yeah. Yeah, that's right, Gabe.
Yeah. You never, never know.
For years, scientists have been improving your car's performance by making gasoline better and better. But there's one discovery scientists have made that's different from all the rest. It's a gasoline component called xylene. Xylene is one of the highest anti-knock gasoline components ever discovered. And today, every gallon of Richfield gasoline contains this super component xylene. Xylene in Richfield gasoline gives higher than ever anti-knock performance. You get that eager pickup in traffic, that surging power that puts you out in front every time. What's more, you have a choice of two great Richfield gasolines with xylene. Your Richfield dealer offers Richfield High Octane at regular price for the average motor. Or Richfield Ethyl. Ethyl at its best for knockless performance in the highest compression motors. Test Richfield gasoline with xylene in your car for just 1 week. We know what your choice will be. Tomorrow, stop where you see the Richfield Eagle on the cream and blue pumps. And now we return you to Escape.
Well, there it was. The lady wanted me to kill her husband and live a life of pleasure on our ill-gotten gains. Very dramatic situation, except for a minor point. She had figured that I shouldn't kill him until after he'd found the gold mine. And another minor point being that I was his best friend. But you know how it is. Life. Best friends always kill best friends. Oh, sure. But while this sordid drama unreeled, we had to hike through that lousy jungle. Hike and hike and hike, and my feet were killing me. The sixth day was the worst one of the trip. We were wading through mangrove swamps thick with huge, thirsty leeches. There were giant mosquitoes that swarmed around us in clouds, and every time I slapped one, I killed 10. Oh, sure, we had mosquito lotion. They loved it.
Gabe?
What?
When are we going to get to the river, Gabe?
After a while, honey. After a while.
After a while turned out to be 9 days more. Then we reached the Sepik, a sluggish, muddy river winding like a serpent through huge, green-furred mountain ranges.
And now we ride.
We blew up the collapse of a boat, loaded all of our stuff aboard, and shoved off. I took the bow, Gabe the stern, Lily sat amidships on a pile of sacks. Easy, Gabe, will you? This baby was designed for two people, not three. We're drawing a lot of water.
Don't worry, Johnny. This is flood season. And with flood season, the water's high. We can carry three, but later it won't work. Then it'll be only two.
Yeah, but we'll be back before then.
Sure, Johnny.
From time to time when we camped, Lily would give me the business. She didn't seem to care whether Gabe caught on or not. I cared. I cared a whole lot. And Gabe, I didn't know yet what it was that he was feeling.
You saved my life, Johnny. I owe you a lot.
Maybe that's what it was. But one afternoon, we camped early and went for a swim. I was paddling around. The water felt good. Gabe and Lily got out and were drying off when all of a sudden, I looked up. It was Gabe. He was standing on the bank, not 20 feet away, with his .45 pointed right at me. I dove. I dove as deep as I could. I could still hear him shooting. I stayed down until I thought my lungs were going to pop. I surfaced. Gabe was waving at me and yelling.
Come on, Johnny! Come on!
You're crazy!
crazy, Jake. Don't shoot anymore.
I'm not shooting at you. Come out.
So I came out. Then I looked around. And there, a few feet beyond where I'd been, was a tremendous crocodile with blood streaming out of him.
When you dove, I thought sure he had you.
Yeah.
Why'd you dive?
I don't know. I must have lost my head.
Gabe saved your life, Johnny.
Yeah, yeah.
I guess that evens us up, huh?
Yeah, I guess so, Gabe.
No, I don't owe you a thing.
That's right.
But you're still my pal, huh, Johnny?
Well, you figure that one. We kept on going until we came to a place where a narrow, rocky tributary came boiling down a big mountain and into the Pacific. This was where we started walking again. The goal was up that fast little creek, and we could never paddle against that current. So we folded the boat, shouldered it and the packs, and started climbing. For a day and a half, we scrambled up that mountain by the fast little stream. Then we came to a wall of gray and white rock. Gabe said, "This is where the gold is." And he was right. Holy schmuckoli, that gold. Sure, we had to work to get it out of the rock. Well, in 6 days, we took out nearly $500,000 worth. We could have taken more, but the stuff was heavy, you know. No, you don't know. You've never seen that much pure gold. Well, just take my word for it. 6 days later, we started down the mountain. Then, when we made camp by the river that night, Lily waited until Gabe was sound asleep.
Johnny.
Yeah?
Now, Johnny.
Now what?
Now you can kill him.
Oh, go away, will you? I want my sleep.
Do it now, Johnny.
Look, baby, I don't want to kill anybody. I'm a rich man. Will you get smart?
Smart? You get smart, Johnny.
What do you mean by that?
Three ways isn't good enough on the split. I want it two ways.
Oh, nuts.
And if you won't kill him, I'll get him to kill you. After all, Johnny, you're the serpent in our happy marriage.
Shut up, will you, and listen.
I don't hear anything except the water.
Yeah. Well, a minute ago, you couldn't hear that for Gabe snoring. They came in the morning. While we were loading up, they came out of nowhere.
Get down!
What's that?
Elves! Perishers!
We couldn't see them, but we could tell from the arrows where they were. We laid low and tried to make every shot count. It wasn't long before we saw they really meant business. They weren't going to go away.
Johnny!
Yeah!
We haven't got enough ammunition to last more than 10 minutes at this rate.
Oh, that's just great!
Can you keep them off that long?
Why? Why, what are you going to do?
I'm going to get down to the stream and load up the boat.
You're crazy, Gabe! You can't make it down that stream!
Sure we can. It's sad or end up with your head on a pole.
Okay, Gabe.
All right. Now cover me. If you hear a shot, you and Lily come fast.
All right! The longest 10 minutes of my life. Lily lay there beside me. She was plenty scared, and she had every right to be. Those arrows were ugly, big and jagged and sharp.
Johnny. Johnny, those arrows are getting closer.
Will you stop jiggling my arm?
I can't help it.
Look, how am I going to shoot if you jiggle my arm?
Suppose they get Gabe.
That'll be tough.
Yeah.
How come you worry about Gabe at a time like this?
Gabe, Schmabe, I'm worried about the gold.
Oh, you dear, sweet girl. Will you stop jiggling my arm?
So sorry.
3 minutes. Four. Five. I kept firing.
Have you any idea what you're shooting at?
Shut up, will you?
I mean it. You just pointed at the grass and go bang.
Will you shut up?
Oh, I should have stood in Frisco.
You should have stood in Frisco.
Oh, don't talk. Just keep shooting.
How can I keep shooting when you keep jiggling my arm? Nasty little thought crawled into my mind. Here I was up to my ankles in arrows, and there was Gabe with a boat, $500,000 and a downhill ride to freedom. Just suppose... Lily must have gotten the same idea.
I'm going to go help Gabe, Johnny. He may need help.
Stay here!
No. Goodbye, Johnny.
Why did I stay? I don't know. I lay there and kept shooting and kept thinking, oh, you sucker, they'll go off without you. But I stayed. Came 10 minutes, I heard it. Gabe's signal. The boat was already in the water, all loaded to go. Gabe faced the jungle, his automatic ready. Lily was crouching on the sand.
Good boy, Johnny. Thanks.
You all set?
Yeah. Just one thing I didn't count on.
What's that?
With all this gold in the boat, it'll only carry two people now.
Okay, Gabe, okay, I get it. Only one thing. Leave me your gun and ammo, will you? I want to die hard.
Wait a minute, Johnny, wait a minute. Maybe we ought to ask Lily who she thinks ought to stay. Maybe she'd rather I stay.
No, Gabe.
How about it, Lily? Who do you want to stay?
That's a tough question. I know. You both got guns. Why don't you fight a duel for it? It'll only take a second, and the winner gets me and the gold. The one who stays behind will be dead, so he won't have to be tortured by headhunters.
Oh, she's pretty cute, huh, Johnny?
Oh, yes, indeed.
Get in the boat, Johnny.
No, Gabe, look, go. You go. Look, now's your chance for a clean start with
it, Gabe. Get in the boat, Johnny, or I'll kill you.
You sure this is how you want it, Gabe?
This is how I want it. Yeah. Yeah, that's it, Johnny. Now, you all set?
Yeah, Gabe. I'm all set.
I hope you can get us down, Johnny. It's an awful fast stream.
Don't you worry about it, Lily.
Why not?
Because it works this way. If either Johnny or me stays here, he gets tortured and then gets his head cut off. If you stay here, you can be a queen. You can live. They won't even touch you. You'll rule a whole tribe all by yourself.
Gabe! What are you talking about?
Stay away from the boat, Lily.
No, Gabe, let her get in, will you? I'll get out.
Sit down, Johnny, or I'll
come on!
Sit down, I said.
Gabe!
Johnny saved my life once. You. All you did was try to get him to kill me. Anyhow, I'm the only man who can get this boat down the rapids. And for that, I need Johnny.
All right. Go. Get out, both of you. I'll be a queen. And I'll love it. And I'll be worth millions. Millions!
Yeah. Yeah, I knew you'd say it, Lily. I knew you'd understand.
Here's an amazing fact for every motorist. The film of oil in your motor is often no thicker than a spider's web. But that thin film is all that saves your motor from destruction. That's why it's important for you to use the best motor oil you can get. We suggest Rich Lube, all-weather motor oil. Rich Lube is refined 100% from the finest Pennsylvania crude obtainable. Rich Lube protects your motor with a tough, elastic oil film that holds its body even under the terrific heat of summer driving. At the same time, it draws excess heat away from moving engine parts. Moreover, Rich Lube, the Pennsylvania premium motor oil, contains special chemicals that clean your motor of harmful deposits as you drive. Yes, it cleans as it lubricates. So keep your motor clean. Keep your motor young. See your Richfield gasoline dealer tomorrow. Ask him to change your oil to Rich Lube all-weather motor oil. Escape is produced and directed by William N. Robeson, and tonight has presented Two Came Back by Jules Archer, adapted for radio by Savage Dollar. Featured in tonight's cast were Joan Banks as Lily, Stacey Harris as Johnny, Paul Fries as Gabe, and Ben Wright as the traitor. Special music arranged and played by Ivan Dittmars. Next week.
You are lost in the wildest mountains of Idaho, surrounded by a raging forest fire which is swiftly bringing a horrible death closer and closer to you. A death from which there is no escape.
Next week at this time, the Richfield Oil Corporation of New York invites you to escape with an exciting story of love and murder in the wilds of Idaho, as Anthony Ellis tells it in The Red Forest. Be listening. Goodbye then, until the same time next week when once again we offer you Escape. Tom Hanlon speaking. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
I guess you could call that a happy ending. Everybody seems to have what they want. Our two explorers have a raft full of gold, and Lily gets to stay behind and be a queen. And that requires that only two come back. In Two Came Back. That was Paul Frees and Ben Wright in Escape from August 4th, 1950. Well, we'll have a bigger raft in the form of the Ketch Scarlet Queen as we venture into adventure in the Orient right after this. You're listening to Old Time Radio Drama on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Start with a cargo of ginseng. Add a fat Chinaman who smells of jasmine and a double-dealing dame, and you have a concoction that's going to be explosive in The White Cargo Act and Ah Sin, one of the adventures of the Scarlet Queen. It comes to us from August 7th, 1947.
Log entry, Ketch Scarlet Queen, Philip Kearney, master. Position, 123 degrees, 12 minutes west, 38 degrees, 15 minutes north. Gyro compass course, 168. Wind fresh, sky fair. Remarks, departed Tianjin, China, 2:30 a.m. Sailing delayed 12 hours due to imprisonment of officers and crew. Reason for imprisonment, the White Cargo Act and Ah Sin. It was a few hours after a searing sunrise that I noticed the water over the side losing its clearness as it filled with the yellow mud of the Hun Ho River, sweeping out from the troubled valleys of Inner Mongolia. The Scarlet Queen limped into the current under power again, rudderless, bullet-scarred, and carrying in her hold $10,000 worth of ginseng roots, the cargo that had been the cause of all her wounds. I had my personal troubles, too, based on the same thing. Two passengers, one wrapped in sailcloth, dead from a bullet through his brain, the other, the woman who killed him. As we passed over the bar at Taku and swung up the Hun Ho toward Tianjin, the stream was jammed from bank to bank with the traffic of Chinese rivers, junks, barges, and refuse. Curious dark eyes swept us as we passed. Naked girl babies were held up to us for sale, and jabbered curses were thrown when we shook our heads. And we inched up against the wash and flow of China. In spite of her slow, limping progress through the rabble of river craft, the Queen did her best to live up to her name. The scarlet figure under her bowsprit swung haughtily across the stern of a fish barge. A swell lifted her nose as she turned disdainfully away from it. But after she was secured to a dock, she seemed to lean wearily against the rope fenders we hung over the side for her. Her crew was tired, too. The way I felt, that cargo of ginseng wasn't worth $10,000, pesos, or glass beads. All I wanted was to get rid of it and everything that went with it and sleep for about 72 hours. But that particular Tianjin day wasn't cut out for rest. A squad of Chinese military police marched around the corner of a building and was shouted to a halt on the dock. A stocky, bullet-headed Chinese colonel, dripping with gold braid, pounded up the gangway and came aboard.
You're master of this ship?
Yeah, but I don't deserve the honor guard. What's it for?
You will speak only in answer to my question. You, your first officer, and your crew are under military arrest.
And so Mutual continues The Voyage of the Scarlet Queen, written by Gil Dowd and Bob Tallman, and starring Elliot Lewis. The Scarlet Queen, proudest ship to plow the seas, bound for uncharted adventure. Every week, a complete entry in the log, and every week, a league further in the strange voyage of the Scarlet Queen.
In In 2 minutes flat, Chinese sentries were stationed at the wheel, the hawsers, and pacing the dock with rifles and fixed bayonets. Two of them prodded Gallagher and me into the cabin. And the colonel, slapping the palm of his hand with a riding crop for emphasis, went to work on it.
Your registry.
The Scarlet Queen, San Francisco, California, USA.
Your destination.
Look, colonel, what is all this?
Your destination.
No set destination. It's an island trading voyage.
Your cargo.
General trading cargo.
Your cargo.
Ginseng roots, number 2 hold.
I will see bill of lading.
Yeah.
This paper no good. Signed by that woman.
You know the answers to all these questions. Why don't you come to the point?
You carry passenger?
Yeah, 1.
2. You leave Ginseng with 2.
When they're dead, they aren't passengers. They're cargo.
I will see dead one. Where is it?
Gallagher?
Huh?
Go get him. Bring him here.
Hey, wait a minute. I'm no morgue attendant. Let him carry his own stiff.
Go get him, Red.
Okay, Skipper. That's your order, huh?
Yeah, you fathead. That's my order. Get out of here. Shove off.
Where's woman passenger?
In the cabin across the companion.
You will come.
Mm-hmm. She's in there.
No! Leave me alone!
What matter? She's sick? Fever?
Yeah, smallpox. You still want to go in?
You tell lies.
What Alice was screaming was natural enough, but the rest wasn't. Her clothes were torn, her face was scratched. She was cowering in a corner, and the look of horror on her face was directed toward me. She dragged herself across the cabin floor like a second rogue company of white cargo and clutched imploringly at the colonel's free hand. Her act was so bad that it was funny, but the colonel had never seen white cargo.
Please, you're a good and kind man. You're not letting him hurt me anymore. He killed my husband. He stole everything we had in the world, our ginseng. Now he tortures me to sign a ransom note.
Very sad American woman.
Oh, yeah. Very sad American woman. Saddest I ever saw.
You will not talk. Sit down to pick.
Okay, you've got the guns, but she's making a fool out of you. Are you a coolie? Does the woman rule your house?
Hey, silent. Poor sad American lady. Do not kneel before humble Chinese. You are strong enough to stand on feet, poor sad American lady.
Yes. Yes, you have given me courage. I lean on your splendid strength, my colonel.
I will gladly save life of poor sad American lady molested in my city by her unworthy countryman. So forced to turn to a Chinese officer for chivalrous aid.
For as many years as I have before me, I will thank you 10,000 times each minute.
I am unworthy. One thank will be sufficient in this manner. You come to my headquarters. There, summoning scribe of English language newspaper China shall haul sad story of chivalrous aid.
It is as nothing. You will gain the military promotion you so richly deserve. I have powerful friends in Nanking.
You have powerful cargo here, Tianjin. $10,000 for said American lady.
Your greed is as great as your chivalry.
It's matched only by your thanks. Very funny, sad lady. I laugh too, Captain Carney.
Yeah, how about laughing some of these guns off my ship?
Oh, no. I not laugh loud enough for that. I laugh because golden thanks of poor, sad American lady will buy many balls of rice for empty bellies in my village. I laugh because cost so little. Only 2 lives. Yours, Captain Carney. Your first officer.
You make good sense up to a point, Colonel, but you're taking a pretty long chance executing a couple of American nationals.
We are only honoring requests from your own people in Korea to hold you for extradition because of dead woman in ginseng. You will be shot while trying to escape.
As the colonel's bodyguards hustled my seaman and me across the gangway and into a lend-lease ambulance fitted out with bars, the storm broke over Tianjin. I took a long, last look at the Queen as we pulled out. A sudden squall swept down the river and across her bow. She shivered a little. She tugged at her moorings. No one has ever really been in jail until they've made the Chinese variety. Alcatraz is a Sunday school summer camp in comparison to Tientsin's. The place is sewerless, and the wind moving heavily in from the dumping ground near the river never lets you forget it. I hope my crew is faring better than I was. I was shoved into a cell that had been died in more than once and left to examine what I could see of my future, which wasn't much. I was pinning all my hopes on one possibility, that Gallagher had caught my cue to shove off and had gone over the side into the river when he left the cabin. I finally gave up worrying about it and stretched out on a stinking, rat-chewed reed mat in the corner of my cell. He fell asleep. When I woke up, I didn't know whether it was day or night, and I didn't care. Day or night, the place would smell the same. Then I heard the door at the end of the long corridor close. Something that sounded like a woman's footsteps. As they drew nearer, I heard the rustle of heavy silk. A strong odor of jasmine crept into my cell. As the key turned in the lock, I braced myself for Alice, probably playing the part of the dragon lady. The door swung open. The first thing that came in was a blast of perfume that lifted me to my feet. Then a small, flickering lantern held aloft by a delicately dimpled hand. The brocade-wrapped mountain of flesh behind it had a face with small, childlike features that were almost lost in the billowing fat that surrounded them. He looked Chinese, but he sounded like Charles Lawton.
Well, now that I've seen you, I don't wonder that she's half out of her mind.
Who are you, Stinky?
Yes, how true. I always put on an extra dash of scent when my business brings me into this foul penal institution, which is rather oftener than I would care to admit.
Huh? What are you, the local bail bond broker or something?
Among other things, yes. In this instance, as you see, I am carrying a lantern. Like Diogenes, I'm looking for an honest man. And you know why?
Tell me anyway.
Because, quite frankly, sir, I myself am a most untrustworthy person. I advise you to remember that in our future dealings.
We do have dealings, is that right?
We do indeed, sir, but I suggest we discuss them in more pleasant surroundings. By the way, did I tell you my name? Ah Sin. I believe it has quite another meaning in English. Shall we go, sir?
I followed him up the long corridor, reeling in the backwash of jasmine that swirled out in his wake. The door of the cell block swung open, and he trotted out through the jailer's office, nodding benevolently at the guard, who bowed from the waist and accepted the lantern from the dimpled hand. We jogged on out to the street without slackening pace. A mob of beggars raised a clamor as Arsene appeared. He pulled from his robe a huge silk purse hanging at his waist and reached into it. Still on the run, he fluttered his hands in and out of the purse, and a continuous shower of small brass coins fell into the street on either side of us. The crowd parted like the Red Sea. And I saw the finishing touch. A Rolls-Royce town car waited at the curb.
After you, sir.
Yeah, thanks. What am I supposed to do now?
Ask you where we're going? Well, my dear fellow, you are at liberty to go any place you like.
Well, then I'd like to get back to my ship.
Very well. If you can find it.
What do you mean? What happened to it?
I've had it moved.
Hey, wait a minute. Who told you you could move my ship?
Now, please, sir, don't excite yourself. Your ship is quite safe.
Yeah, I'll believe that when I'm on her decks and out of here.
You will be, one way or another.
Now you said something over that colonel's dead body. And maybe yours, too.
Well, we must all die sometime. But how appropriate that you should mention the colonel. He met with an unfortunate accident an hour ago. He fell down and cut his throat.
Outside Tientsin, the limousine turned away from the river and climbed into the hills. We rolled through the gates of a high-walled estate and stopped in front of a pink stucco Western-style mansion. Inside, we dog-trotted through a series of huge rooms and into a small, chromium-fitted bar overlooking Ah Sin's terraced Chinese gardens and the city and the writhing Hun Ho far below. I didn't waste any time on the view. Alice was sitting on one end of a couch, and sprawled out on the rest of it was a sandy-haired white man. He was cleaning a Frontier model Colt.
Well, I see you didn't have no trouble rounding him up, Ah Sin.
Phil, darling. Thank heaven you're all right.
Well, if it isn't the poor, sad American lady. Where'd you find her, Ah Sin?
I would say she's quite easy to find, wouldn't you? And this gentleman is my confidential secretary, Mr. Mangan.
Howdy, Captain.
Yeah, all right. We're all here. Let's have it, huh, Sin?
Oh, yes, indeed. Alice, would you make your friend comfortable? Fetch him a Ricky Splash?
Never mind the splash. Bring the bottle.
Well, sir, as you say, here it is. I am a merchant.
Mm-hmm.
I deal in a little bit of everything. A jack of all trades, you might say. Plantations in the islands, curling, trade in general. I find it worthwhile to keep tabs on my competitors.
Mm-hmm.
While doing so yesterday, I intercepted a cable addressed to Mr. Kang of Shanghai and signed by your chief officer, Mr. Gallagher.
Huh? You're quite an operator.
Thank you. To continue.
Before you do,
I happen to know that Mr. Kang is a very penurious man. Since Mr. Gallagher demanded, not requested, assistance from him, I assume that you are in a position to put him in the way of a rather handsome profit.
Huh?
I thereby took immediate steps to obtain your release from prison. I did not know then the true nature of your enterprise.
I don't get this.
You will. Because, you see, quite by coincidence, this lovely young lady approached my confidential secretary, and so impressed was he by what she had to tell him that he brought her directly to me.
Uh-huh.
She advises us that the voyage of your Scarlet Queen is being financed by Kang and Company to recover a treasure of very considerable value.
Really?
What was the figure, Mangan?
$10 million. And you can take off that poker face, Corny. We ain't trying to horn in on you. Huffson's got a real business proposition. You just listen to him.
Very concisely put, Mr. Mangan. To continue.
Yes.
I am also aware that a new syndicate, headed by a Portuguese gentleman, Mr. Constantino, is interested. I have contacted both Mr. Kang and Mr. Constantino and have received their replies. To wit, Mr. Kang offers $5,000 ransom for you and will reimburse me for the expenses involved of getting rid of that troublesome colonel.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Constantino, on the other hand, has offered me $10,000 cash to release you into the custody of one of his agents. So, here you find me on the horns of a dilemma.
$10,000 against $5,000? What are you waiting for?
Well, sir, there is still another possibility.
Huh?
If you and I were to go in together, on a full partnership basis, I remind you, forgetting both Mr. Kang and Mr. Constantino. Well, Mr. Carney,
I'll make it easy for you, Arsene. The answer's no.
Why?
Because there's something wrong with your story. Alice here never knew anything about the voyage of the Scarlet Queen until one of you told her.
Well, what about it, Mangan?
He's bluffing.
Yes, of course. Is that right, Mr. Carney?
I'm not bluffing.
Alice?
He's not being truthful. He made violent love to me on his ship. He told me everything.
He did, eh? Well, Mr. Carney, majority rules.
Don't rush him, Arsene. He'll come around. Let him sleep on.
Whatever you say, Mr. Mangan. The servant will show you to your room, Mr. Carney.
I followed the silent poker-faced boy out of the room and up to the second floor. He unlocked the door of the room and padded back down the hall without opening it, as if he was scared of something inside. I opened the door, saw what it was. The room looked like a typhoon had hit it. Every stick of furniture was broken, and the floor was strewn with fragments of crockery. In the middle of the mess, with a bedpost clutched in his hand like a club, stood my chief mate, Red Gallagher.
Oh, it's you, Skipper. I was expecting that hunk of perfume blubber that had me locked in here. How'd you find
me? I didn't find you, Red. I was brought here myself.
Did they tell you I was here?
No.
Well, they told me you were. That's why I came.
Well, I'm here now. All of that helps.
What?
Yeah, I'm a lot of help. Now we're both locked.
Go on. Break up some furniture, Skipper. It'll make you feel better. I was saving a couple of tables, but go ahead. You can have them.
I didn't get to the furniture breaking stage for a couple of hours. Then Gallagher took one of the tables and I took the other. Then we pulled the mattress out from under the pile of lumber in the middle of the room and stretched out on it. It was better than the Tianjin jail, a lot better. I went right to sleep. When I woke up this time, I knew it was after dark. I could see stars through the window grill. But except for that, I might have been back on the reed mat in my jail cell. The footsteps were the same. As they came closer, the rustle of silk, the smell of perfume. This time I was ready for Arsene, behind the door with Gallagher's club.
No, don't!
Okay, calm down. I thought you were somebody else.
Then you mean you aren't angry with me?
No, I mean I can't knock your brains out because you haven't got any.
Listen, my darling, I know a way out of here.
Yeah, and to what this time?
Please, you must believe me. I had to act the way I did. Don't you see how it's worked out?
Yeah, you're a great little politician, Gorgeous. You stand on your record. You really do.
Look, I came here to sell the yin thing so I could get you out of jail. But Mangan had this plan. He works for Constantino on the side, but Ah Sing doesn't know it.
What?
He said if I'd tell that story about the treasure to Ah Sing, he promised he'd get you out of jail. I don't know why it worked, but it did. It doesn't make any sense, does it?
It's the first thing I've heard you say that does make sense.
Darling, we haven't got much time. I found out where the Scarlet Queen is and the repairs are all done.
Oh?
Ah Sing smoked 3 pipes after dinner, so we won't have to worry about him. Mangan is out and won't be back until after midnight. And I've bribed the chauffeur to drive us into town. The car's waiting now. Where's Red?
He's asleep. Don't wake him.
I'm awake, Skipper. I've been listening to that yarn, too.
You believe her?
No, do you?
No, but it's a way out. Think we should take...
No. Well, let's go. Story's okay so far, Skipper.
Yeah, so far.
What do I have to do to convince you? I said I'd bring you to the Scarlet Queen, and there she is.
Yeah, with a light in her cabin. Come on, Gorgeous, introduce us to your friend.
No, wait. Phil, don't go in there. I don't know. I can't go through with it. Please.
Get out of the way, Gorgeous. What are you pulling now?
Please, Phil, I mean it. Don't open that door.
Get away from me.
Phil!
Right on in, boys. Meet my buddies. This here's Charlie Lee. The poor one over yonder's his brother.
Get the introductions.
Anything you say. Charlie, get a hold of Miss Alice here and throw over the side. Leave she here. Have yourself a chair, Kevin.
Thanks. You're in my chair. I'll stand up.
There ain't nothing to that thinking better while you're on your feet. Take me. I've done some of my best shooting from an easy chair.
Yeah, women in the back.
Your mate looks like he's fixing to jump me. Better tell him to sit down.
Take it easy, Red.
She took that slug for you, Skipper. She pushed you out of the way. You're going to stand here and take this?
Let go, Red.
I figured you right, didn't I, Corny? There ain't nobody like a Yankee ship captain to put business first.
That's right, Mangan. What's your proposition?
Well, first thing, you're going to sit down and write a little old letter to Mr. Kane. You're going to tell him that you're signing on a new chief mate.
Yeah, the berth is yours. I'm fed up with it.
Mind your manner. As I was saying, Captain, a new chief mate, and you're plumb fed up with the drunks in your crew, so you're fixing to sign on some nice, steady Chinese hands.
What for?
Well, I don't want to throw no surprise at that Mr. Kang when he comes aboard at Shanghai, do I?
What do you think he'll do, kidnap him?
What's the matter with that? Ain't nobody understands ransom money like the Chinese folks. Time he gets through visiting old Mr. Constantino down south in Hong Kong, why... He might even talk.
Mr. Manga.
What's eating on you?
Charlie, he go out to Care Lady. He not come back.
Well, you churn head, go look.
Yes, Mr. Manga.
Well, Captain Corny, what you think about my little old scheme?
I think it's funny.
Well, shall we try it then, just for laughs? Why, me and you...
No!
Stay right where you at.
No!
Don't move. Don't try nothing. You find out I've got eyes in the back of my head.
Now, Skipper. Yeah, Red, let's go. Mangan stood sideways in the door, his attention divided. His eyes were on us about half the time, but I could tell he was listening for a noise out on deck. When he heard it, he automatically swung the gun away from us. We started our rush, but we never finished it. Mangan straightened up. The gun dropped from his hand, and he staggered back into the cabin. He spun slowly around and pitched forward on his face. As he went down, I saw what had happened. Like the colonel, he had met with an accident. He had fallen down and cut his throat.
Dear me, what's this? Another accident. Oh, I say, it's my secretary, Mr. Mangan. Oh, poor chap.
Yeah, don't go all to pieces now.
Oh, I shall miss him, I really shall. He was so colorful.
Ah, Sin, you're an old scoundrel. What are you doing here?
Yes, but first a word of caution. I have not come alone.
Oh, yeah, I sense that from the way people have been dropping dead around here.
But Mangan bled such a lot, so untidy. And in your cabin, too. The debris. Take it. Out, out!
Okay, Stinky, it's your play again.
The game is over. I'm merely picking up my tricks.
What's the score?
I've had my losses, but, you know, I like you, Captain Carney, and you too, Mr. Gallagher, even though you did break up all the furniture in my guest bedroom. Irish Chippendale, very hard to replace.
Ah, forget it. I just lost my temper.
But, you see, I have had my losses, and were I to emerge from these various dealings without a profit, I should lose face because I am a very successful merchant. If you could see your way clear, even $1,000...
Look, we're working men. We don't have $1,000 to spend on your face.
Well, then, any little token, some trading goods, perhaps.
I need everything I have. If you'd found us before that colonel did, we might have made a deal.
Indeed. What do you mean?
Well, he confiscated a cargo of ginseng.
And if you had it, you would be willing to hand it over to me as payment for your safe passage?
Brother, you could have it and welcome.
And those would have been your sentiments, too, Captain Carney?
Exactly.
Well, then, it's settled. Goodbye.
Hey, wait a minute. What's settled?
Oh, I thought you would understand since your ship has been here in my repair yard.
I understand less every minute.
Well, I had the ginseng put into my warehouse this afternoon, and since you've agreed that if you had it, you would gladly pay it for your clearance, I consider the matter closed. I've made my profit, my face is saved, and you may leave with my blessings as soon as I obtain the release of your crew from that wretched prison. But I will drench myself with jasmine, never fear.
In an hour, my crewmen were all aboard, smelling faintly of jasmine themselves. Without even waiting for dawn, we cast off from the dock and swung out into the sullen current of the Hun Ho. The eastern sky had brightened slightly by the time we crossed the Taku Bar, and the tops of the swells were shining in the faint light as we moved out into the yellow sea. Then the sunrise and the fresh morning westerly came at the same time, and I cut the motor. Visit to Tientsin jail, perched up in the clean breeze, and jumped to that station. They leaned on the halyards with a will, and the mainsail climbed to its working position. Still, gleamed in the sunlight. The ship blossomed out, then the mizzen, and the Scarlet Queen leaned onto the course with a spirit. Though she understood that she was well again.
I guess the rig will get us there, Skipper.
Getting us away from Tientsin, that's good enough for now.
Yeah, I know what you mean. But what's it taking us into?
Shanghai.
That isn't what I mean. And you know it.
Expecting trouble, Red?
On this trip, how can you miss? Drink, Skipper.
It's a little early, but after you, mate. After you. Log entry, catch Scarlet Queen, 5:30 p.m. Miles traveled, 7,885. Wind brisk, sky fair. Sea cresting with high cross swell. Mainsail and mizzen reefed. Ship secure for night. Signed, Philip Carney, Master.
From early in the voyages of the Scarlet Queen, that was The White Cargo Act and Ah Sin, featuring star and producer Elliot Lewis in an outing from August 7, 1947. Get ready to enter the inner sanctum as old-time radio drama continues this Sunday night on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.